Ethel Struthers has been involved with Regina Unitarians off and on since she first started attending with her parents as a child. She went on to study psychology and education. She's currently certified in choice theory and teaches grades 4 and 5 with Regina Public School Board. Ethel.
Well, hello everybody. I'm just right now taking a minute and looking at Joanne to see whether or not we have this piece of music that we might play. And I feel like playing it. It's a piece of music. It's by a group called the Orishas. And it's a Cuban group. It's a group that comes out of Cuba. And I thought it was a bit brash to call yourself the Orishas because, again, those are definitely mediators with God who have sacred powers. And so maybe having said that, maybe it does make sense. But I just thought it was a bit brash. But I really kind of enjoy the music. And it is the only part of this presentation that will actually include sound and sights, etc. So we'll just do about a minute of this group.
Mi voz como Jackie Chan, que lo que dan mil cuentos, mil promesas que enganchan. Yo sí, yo fui lo que te digo, people. El dinerito es el gobierno quien lo roba, chico. Habla tú, habla como si yo te fuera quien habla. Habla tú, habla política cochina, pero.
Okay, so. And another thing is there are a number of, or there's a couple of websites on YouTube, or there's a couple of YouTube videos that also show the Santeria Cuba, and as well the Santeria in Brazil, or not the Santeria in Brazil, but the Candomblé in Brazil. And both of those are good YouTube videos, you know, given the context that I now have from Stephen Prothero's book. All right. So, I'm here to talk with you today about the Yoruba religion, the sixth presentation in the series, God is Not One. I'd like to begin by saying how much I appreciate this opportunity to speak on these different religions, because each one is so outside my experience. And this one is no exception. So, for example, I come from a monotheistic tradition with a propensity towards orthodoxy, which is right thought, and a very empty cosmos, to a polytheistic tradition with a propensity towards orthopraxy, which is right practice, and a very active cosmos. Now, I mention this now because I realize this presentation will be light on Orishas, and only because of my limitations. So in the Yoruba tradition, there are many, and they are varied, and they have human, and they are human-like in their behaviors, unlike my belief, which has one God who's omnipotent, all-knowing, and all-good. So as a result, I may have unwittingly downplayed the complexity and possibly even to some degree misrepresent the religion. And that's important because the Orishas are the exemplars of the Yoruba religion. So hang on to whatever I say about them, because I might not have said enough. And I don't mean to, but I know it's like you got a lot and I'm just used to thinking one. So I will be deliberately using many excerpts from Stephen Prothero's book, God is Not One, the eight rival religions of the world that run the world, to better convey the concepts And as well, because I really do enjoy his writing so much. And I do feel that since these are, I really don't want to misrepresent the religion. And so I will do what I can to include what it is that he has said. Now, when I looked at the YouTube videos at the Santeria of the Santeria in Cuba and the Candombles in Brazil, I was pleased that I had the background that I did and that had been taken from his writing. So, now, in a nutshell, what is shared across the elusive and elastic manifestation of the Yoruba religious is practice. So from Nigeria to New York, Orisha devotees are practitioners more than believers. And their practice consists of various techniques for communication and exchange between human beings and Orishas. Now, these techniques aim at connection, which is narrowing the gap between the earthly and the heavenly realms by calling on a series of mediators. And as Unitarians, too, we are practitioners. We follow principles, but how it is that we approach it, it's not based on right belief. So I find that interesting to see myself, too, I believe, as a practitioner. So I will begin, by situating us in time and place and following with a description of the Yoruba religion itself, the problem and solution, the techniques for achieving the solution, and the exemplars, which are the Orishas. So now, as it was stated in the abstract on the Yoruba religion, it varies widely across time and space, from the traditional practices of West Africa to the contemporary Yoruba derived adaptations of Candomblé in Brazil and Santeria in Cuba. Now, on the one hand, these are so different, and he refers to them as rhizomes of the Yoruba tradition that may be connected by roots, but by virtue of the new soils and new climates have become distinct plants. Yet, they are still sufficiently closely connected, and in fact, far more closely connected than the Mormons, the Protestants, and Catholics, to be treated together here. And I enjoy thinking about that because I never really realized that how we still are all, how Mormons, Protestants, and Catholics are actually, yes, all part of the same group. Now, the estimates of the number of Yoruba practitioners in West Africa, they run into the tens of millions. Nigeria is the homeland of the Yoruba people. It's Africa's most populous country, and the Yoruba can also be found in Benin, Togo, Sierra Leone, and are again one of Nigeria's largest ethnic groups. Now, here's what I always find so interesting, is although Islam and Christianity are now the dominant religions in Nigeria, with 45% of the population each, it's rare to find someone who has entirely banished Yoruba religion from her repertoire. Now, this is possible because the practitioners of the Yoruba religion, they do not believe that religion has to be a zero-sum game and that they must choose between the Orishas and either Jesus or Allah. They feel quite comfortable seeing the priest on Sunday and the diviner on Monday. I love that. So again, just to sort of reiterate it, because I think it's a really crucial part of this religion, instead of greeting foreign religions with an either or of Aristotle, they greeted them with the both and of Eshu. So as a result, the Yoruba beliefs and practices survived, not just on their own, among those who have rebuffed the advances of Islamic and Christian missionaries, but also inside Islam and Christianity, which Yoruba Muslims and Christians have stealthily transformed into the distribution channels for the Yoruba and religious culture. And that will come out again later because it has been a religion that has had to go underground in different times, in different ways. So the Yoruba-derived religions are also scattered across the African. Okay, so they've also been scattered across, I always say this wrong, it's the diaspora, the diasporas, diasporas created by the transatlantic slave trade in Brazil and Cuba and Colombia and Puerto Rico, Jamaica, Grenada, St. Kitts and St. Vincent, the Dominican Republic and Venezuela, Uruguay and Trinidad and Tobago. Yoruba slaves arrived by the millions in South America, the Caribbean, and the United States. And according to the Yoruba, just as an add-on, according to the Yoruba scholar William Bascom, no African group has had greater influence on the New World culture than the Yoruba. Since the African religions were denounced as heathen and often outlawed, Yoruba practitioners did what the Yoruba have been doing since the Orisha of Iron, Ogun, forged a path for the gods from heaven to earth. They adapted to difficult circumstances with courage and creativity. Now, Yoruba practitioners, they kept their religious traditions alive by marrying them to Catholicism. When ordered to cease and desist from the beliefs, the Yoruba slaves, they took the orishas underground and then resurrected them in the guise of saints. So things changed and remained the same. Now, many whites and Hispanics without any blood ties to Yoruba land also participate in these traditions, and orisha devotees who were once almost entirely poor can now be found among the middle classes. What these traditions share is a marriage to Catholicism, plus fidelity to core techniques of Orisha devotion, such as divination, spirit-body possession, and sacrifice. Now, interestingly, this marriage has lasted because of the similarities between the Roman Catholicism and Yoruba religion. Both operate in a cosmos with a supreme being at the top, human beings at the bottom, and then they have a specialized intermediaries in between that facilitate this communication and exchange among the divine-human divide. 100 million is the most commonly printed estimate for the Yoruba practitioners worldwide. Total adherents, people who seek help from the orishas in some manner, probably top out about 8 figures rather than 9. West Africa is about 25 million. Brazil, 10 to 25 million. Cuba, 2 to 3 million. United States, few hundred thousand. And in total, there are more adherents to Yoruba than there are Jews, Sikhs, placing this tradition amongst the world's top 6 religions. So the practitioners of this religion believe that the human problem facing people is disconnection, and that the solution to this problem is to reconnect ourselves to our destinies, to one another, and to sacred power. We have a destiny that we have forgotten, and then the antidote to this forgetfulness is to remember, or to recover our destiny so that we can do what we were created to do for ourselves, our families, and the world. Basically, seek to discover our purposes and follow it with passion and resolve. Now, according to the story, this disconnection already happens at birth. Just before we are reborn, the Yoruba believe in reincarnation, one of our souls, they have two, appears before the high god Olodumare to receive new breath. Olodumare then allows us to choose our own destiny, which includes in our personality, occupation, our unique share of good and bad luck, as well as the day we will return to heaven. Once we are born, it's all forgotten. So then we spend our lives wandering through life, sort of shielded from our true purpose. And then we get sidetracked by pursuits in love and work, or things that become foisted on us by our parents, friends, co-workers, and spouses. And so the antidote to this forgetfulness, we have to remember. We have to recover our destiny so that we can do what we were created to do for ourselves, our families, and our world. Well, fortunately, we're not alone in this task. And there's a pantheon of super beings known as Orishas who want to help us live in harmony with our destiny. They transmit their wisdom through a series of divination techniques. So you have specially trained priests and diviners known as Babalawus, if men, and Yalawus, if women, who through Ifa, the most vulnerable and venerated of these divination techniques, are able to. They help us recover our destiny. They protect it through sacrifice and fulfill it through action in the world. So, in fact, one of the very first tasks of any parent is to take a child to a diviner so that the destiny can be read and revealed. Now, the diviners, they do not dispense secret wisdom. They are instead the mediators between the Orishas and the clients. They know how to cast the 6 palm nuts or the 8 half-seed shells, the divining chain used to start any consultation. They have memorized at least 1,000 Ifa verses, 4 of each. So they've memorized all these verses, and then depending on what pattern is shown, they will recite to you 4 particular verses, of which you will select the ones that resonate with you. They are not oracles. They are mediators between the client and the Orisha. So they say, while the simplest way to understand what is happening when a client goes for a consultation is that the diviner is channeling the wisdom of the Orishas to a human being, that's not quite right, since for the Yoruba, as for the ancient Greeks, wisdom is recalling what we already know within. I stayed with that thought for a long time, and I don't even think I got beyond there, but I had to move on, you know, to really try and understand what that relationship is really all about. However, sort of moving on, to understand the Ifa divination, it's important to understand how active the client is and how passive the Babalawu does not know why the client comes for the consultation. Could be anything from boyfriend troubles to decisions about jobs, moving, or loneliness. Presenting problem is a mystery. So second, it is the client and not the Babalawu who decides which of the recited verses is appropriate. So again, although it's the Babalawu who brings the prodigious memory for the poems, it's the client that does the choosing. Now, as it goes on, it has to be emphasized that the Yoruba put huge stock in the capacities of the human being. Now, and so, as we go on to explain this, according to the Yoruba tradition, each person has a physical body called the Ara and at least 2 souls, one of them called Emi, associated with breath, and the other called Ori, associated with destiny. This Ori in each of us is animated by the same sacred power that animates the Orishas, which is the Ashi. So whatever is happening in the Ifa divination is happening between us and the Orishas. It's also happening with the part of us that remembers and the part of us that forgets, or which is to say between our more divine selves and human selves. Far from demanding our subservience, therefore, the Babalawu is helping to call us back to our original selves to recover the destinies we chose for this life before it began. And again, this is accomplished through the techniques of divination, sacrifice, and spirit-body possession. So that in combination allows us truly to flourish as the individuals and societies. Now, generosity is a key virtue in the Yoruba culture. And so that's where to sacrifice is to show generosity for the Orishas. Any given sacrifice is offered to a particular Orisha, but a portion first goes to Eshu, who can be entrusted to deliver it only if he is cut in on the action from the start. Now sometimes the offering, it is a blood sacrifice. They would take a chicken, for example, which in almost all cases is then cooked and eaten. And it is the animal blood is believed in this tradition to be particularly rich in the ashi. Ifa divination, it's a reciprocal. It's reciprocal. So it begins with the Orisha's offering words of wisdom to the practitioner and ends with the practitioner offering a gift of some sort to the Orisha. So now as we try and move on to understand the possession a little bit, so Prothero goes on to say, whereas in the traditional Catholicism, the saint is satisfied with the prayers of the faithful and an occasional candle lit in his name, it's not so in the traditions of the Candomble and Santera. There, the words and the actions are not enough. They must eat, the Orishas must eat and drink, so it should not be surprising that dancing and drumming are religious practices too. Dance is so central to this religious tradition that some have referred to it as a dancing religion. The Yoruba trance dancing is often referred to as a spirit possession, but that's not quite right since the Orisha possesses both the body and the spirit of the devotee. But it is through dance that the Orisha enters the body. But I'm not quite sure how that works. So for those who are Yoruba adherents, okay, so here we go. For those who now are the Yoruba adherents, the cosmos is awash with sacred power. And there are the malevolent spirits called the Ajogun that can make your life a living hell if you cross them. There are the ancestor spirits known as the Igungun who can get up at festivals and dance and, like the Ajogun, are endowed with sacred power referred to as the Ashi. And that power is another really fascinating part about this, but it's the power to make things happen or to stop things. And then there are the Orishas, the powerhouses of sacred power, and they are the ones that the devotees consult. They're the ones they consult through the process of the divination, and they are the ones the devotees feed through the technique of sacrifice. The Orishas respond by listening to them and making things happen. Now, there are different types. Now, there were those who were present with Old Dumer, Alo Dumer at creation. There are the personifications of natural forces. And you also have the deified ancestors. Devotees disagree about just how many Orishas there are. So traditionally, like the accounting can traditionally run from 401 to 601, with the plus one gesturing at the fact that in the Yoruba culture, there's always room for one more at the table. Most Brazilian and Cuban practitioners recognize usually up to one to two dozen, and then there seems to be seven powers that are really quite commonly referred to. Now this, you've got Alodumar, and this is the supreme being who rules the cosmos from high, remote, distant, and difficult to approach. Eshu and Orunmila, they are the most important. And again, you've got Orunmila, the diviner, who delivers the messages from above to the humans, and Eshu is the messenger that delivers or refuses to deliver the sacrifices from below to the Orishas and other spiritual beings. It is the Orunmila who is the owner of the Ifa corpus, which is the storehouse of wisdom of the Yoruba mythology. Orunmila is said to know the destinies of humans and Orishas alike. And then Ocean is the Orisha of rivers and sweet waters, also the goddess of love. You've got Obatala is the god of human creation who first fashioned clay into human form. He is a model of the sort of patience that makes for peace. Now, this is a pretty, I found this quite interesting in terms of the impact that religion can have on a culture. It is said that Obatala played a role in legitimizing the Cuban Revolution of 1959. On January 8, 1959, just days after Castro and his guerrillas took Havana, a white dove sat on his shoulder during his speech for national unity. Now, the white dove symbolizes Christianity's Holy Spirit, but it also symbolizes Obatala. So in Castro's first public act as leader of the new nation, he got support from both the Catholics and the Santerias. So, Ogun, the god of creativity and technology. Now we're getting to, they can be further categorized, but the Yoruba practitioners, in keeping with their strong preferences for action over belief, they don't typically worry themselves about too many kind of categorizing. And I guess the ones I'm referring to is whether you categorize them into male, female, sky, earth, hot and cool, or forest and town. Nor do they fret too much about an afterlife. What really matters is how to get the Orishas to intervene on your behalf in this worldly matters of love, luck, and work. And in order to do that, you need to get to know them, what they eat, what they wear, how they sing and dance. So then, this is again, which is so separate from what I'm familiar with, one of the most intriguing facets of the Orishas is how inescapably human they act. They have personalities and preferences, including their own distinctive tastes in food, drink, and music. Like Hindu gods, they can marry, but unlike Hindu gods, they can also divorce. Now, the gaps between sacred and profane, spirit and matter, the supernatural, natural and everyday, are at best hairline cracks in the Yoruba culture. The distinction between divinity and humanity is equally fuzzy. Since human beings carry the awesome power of the Ashi inside them, and Orishas are by no means above even the basest human emotions. So many Orishas are adept at both creation and destruction. So, for example, the storm and stormy deity Oya, she can bring both the abundance of irrigation and the devastation of floods. Now, Orishas are sometimes compared to Greek gods for their foibles and fallibility, but that comparison is also not quite apt because the Orishas suffer also for their misdeeds. But I think when we get back to it, and you'll find out there's some more that's pretty interesting about the Orishas. So Yoruba religion, it is reciprocal. It's a system of communication and exchange between human beings and the divine, mediated by this vast pantheon of powers. There's always one foot in the natural realm and the other in the supernatural. Here, both sides speak, both sides listen, and without the Orisha to empower them, human beings would die, but without the human beings to feed them, the Orishas would die. So, as I'm going to deviate a bit, although the Yoruba culture is oral by tradition, it doesn't have an extensive iconography built up around the Orishas. They tend to be represented in shrines made of natural objects, stones and herbs, instead of paintings and statues. Now, it's only been actually in recent, they tend to typically be worshipped via the images of the Catholic saints in which they've been identified with, and it's only been in recent decades that images of the Orishas themselves have been circulated. Now, here, the stories themselves are found, again, in the Ifa corpus and memorized and chanted by the the Babalawos. And here the Orishas seem to be, it's this one of us rather than the sacred in the sense of set apart. And that's going to come up again and again as one of their biggest strengths. And I, in addition to the full range of human emotions, they have a full complement of virtues and vices. They do not present themselves as either wholly good or wholly evil. They can be generous and petty, merciful and vengeful, and they can harm as well as heal. And so they challenge us not to eradicate evil, but to balance it with good, and not only out there in the world, but also inside ourselves. We're good, where good and evil coexist. This complexity has long troubled Christians, Muslims, and scholars who all too often fail to see the lessons lurking underneath the Orisha's moral failings. The fact that the gods stumble and stir is one of the Yoruba's religious glories. So, now, it is praise to them for drawing near to the human condition, for refusing to hold themselves above and beyond the rest of us. So just to return a bit to the system of correspondence, it is extensive. So at least in the New World, the Orishas are most famously associated with Catholic saints, but they're also associated with numbers, colors, emblems, virtues, herbs, clothing, jewelry, temperaments, land formations, bodies of water, parts of the body, days of the week, occupations, natural forces, drum beats, songs, dance steps, foods they will not eat, and foods they cannot do without. And as maybe one example of that, the Cuban devotees of Oshun, now they associate her not only with Our Lady of Charity, but also with love, rivers, gold, fertility, the lower abdomen, seduction, fans, seashells, brass, the color yellow, and the number five, and pumpkins. It's rich, you know, the Yoruba religion. Now, and even again to further try and get this point, the Yoruba religion is not simply a system of communication and exchange between the divine and the human realms. It is also a map to every mountain and valley of human experience, a system of signs and wonders out of which one can make meaning from seemingly small and unrelated things. The net effect of this correspondence is to make everything, everyone, and everywhere potentially sacred. Every moment presents a possibility to reconnect with the Orishas and through them with your destiny and the harmony that pursuing it brings. So, in conclusion, the Yoruba religion, it rests on practice more than faith. It is more than a rigid belief system. It is a pragmatic way of life. The practice consists of various techniques for communication and exchange between human beings and Orishas, and these techniques aim at connection, at narrowing the gap between the earthly and heavenly realms by calling on a series of mediators. So essentially, seek to discover our purpose and follow it with passion and resolve. There's our little bit on your own. Okay, thank you.
I think we're going to limit this to three questions because we're running a little late. Okay? You look at the clock.
I have to say, I'm impressed with the sort of holistic nature of it. Mm-hmm. And the sort of, you know, it's not the God on high. It's, you know, it's really encompassing what is human. But I wanted to know what annoys the, I think you called it the Ajulos.
I wanted to know the same thing.
I was going to use another word.
That isn't included in here. I wanted to know the same thing. And I wanted to know even what kind of punishment might be meted out to some of these orishas too. But I don't know. What you might get a flavor for that is actually if you look on the YouTube video that talks with the YouTube video, which is the Candomblé in Brazil, because there's this sort of phrase about. I can't remember what the phrase is, but I remember the guy sitting back and going, yeah, you just don't want to be doing that, you know? So sorry about that, but that I don't know.
So I've been kind of keeping this undercover, but I was at a barbecue about 10 years ago and was with a friend, a woman, and there was a butterfly way up there. She said, if you're any kind of a decent person, that butterfly would come down and land on your shoulder. So immediately it came down, landed on my shoulder, went up, came down two more times.
Yeah.
So now, if any of you want any spiritual advice, I'm available.
This is it, the final question.
I just want to say thank you too for you and the others in the service committee, Sunday service committee, pursuing this book and exploring the different chapters on the different religions. I read the book and I recommend it to anybody, and I'd love to start a study group on it because it's absolutely fascinating. And I wanted to mention that. My understanding from reading the book, and I could read it four or five times, mm-hmm. and I still wouldn't get it all. So this has been enlightening as well. But the Aruba religion is so widespread underneath the surface in so many countries that it has struck me that your presentation of it to us today isn't like talking about the Greek myths or something that don't seem to have any influence. This really does. And for the political situation in the world, for negotiations, and many other things, this is underlying a lot. And apparently in the U.S. and in South American countries where a lot of North Americans go for holidays and so forth, there are these big sacrifice sites that are now out there. The religions like Santeria and I forget the Brazilian one, but they actually are now sort of rising, mm-hmm. so that you can visit these sites and so forth, and see examples of them. So I just wondered if you were thinking at all along those lines, like the political lines, when you.
Well, I certainly know. Well, in terms of political, I was just more really curious because I've heard, when I hear of the resilience people of Haiti, you know, and I'm just kind of wondering to what extent, how is this influencing, you know, in what way is this Yoruba religion influencing their lives? So I'm looking at it more from just sort of comments that I've heard. I haven't looked at it more from a real political point other than bringing up what had been said about Castro and just but I do really value how much it does represent people's lives, or it has been a part of. So in a way, although I mentioned that about the Greek mythology, and it just as a way of going, there's just these personalities, this cosmos is again far more active than I can in any way fathom. I'm not sure if I would include that again because I don't in any way, it's a very serious business. But other than really understanding the influence of it or knowing the, just one other one is the other video here on the Santeria, the National Geographic one. It is also one that does delve a little bit into some of the sacrifices that goes on, and it shows you how that is included. And I can imagine that it is becoming more above ground. Mm-hmm. But that's all I know on that. Yeah.
Helen has a brief announcement about this series.
I just wanted to say that Ethel and I had planned on alternating, you know, every month and so forth, but we have now Sunday Service Committee hat. We have a number of outside speakers, so the next part, which is Judaism, will be sometime in January, and then Ethel and I will wrap up this series and then see what else happens after that.
Okay, thank you very much,
thank
Ethel.
You.